This morning's lesson was entitled, Evangelism, It's What We Do. In that lesson, we discussed how important it is to place a very high priority and a strong emphasis on evangelism for a congregation of people like this one. We said that it's so very important, number one, because God loves people. Number two, because Jesus commanded us to reach out. And number three, because saving and growing are a part of God's plan. I hope that we'll all take to heart the things that we discussed this morning. And if for some reason you missed it, it's available on CD, cassette, tape, or in a day or two, it'll be archived on the website. Tonight, I'd like for us to turn our attention to one particular aspect of outreach. In fact, it may be the one particular aspect of it that gives most of us as much trouble as any other one thing in our lives, and that is knowing exactly how to reach our family members and our friends with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Now let's begin by acknowledging the fact that every single family is different. In fact, we could say that every single family is very different in many ways. And while we may sometimes make assumptions or even go so far as to pass judgment based on the idea that everybody else's family is just like my family, and so if I were them, I'd be doing so-and-so, or they need to do this because this is how we do it, we can get into trouble by using that kind of thought process sometimes. Those assumptions and judgments are usually, well, they're usually faulty. It is interesting to me that the chronicling of the typical family in the United States has to a large degree fallen into the realm or the territory of primetime TV. As far back as many of us can remember, except those two or three of you that can remember back before the beginning of television, as far back as most of us can remember, there's always been a primetime sitcom type show that probably, at least on the part of its writers and creators, seeks to illustrate or stand for the typical American family. Now, Father Knows Best, Leave It to Beaver, that's about as far back as I go, but I don't think they were the first ones. But through the years, we can remember all kinds of family sitcoms. Everything from Andy Griffith and Mayberry RFD to All in the Family and I Love Lucy and the good, the bad, the not so good. The fact is, though, there is no such thing as the typical American family, because every family is different. It has particular characteristics, peculiarities, circumstances and situations, and some of those things change within days or weeks, and sometimes in a very drastic way. Most of us probably didn't grow up in a household like Beavers or I Love Lucy. There probably have been a lot of All in the Families, or maybe even The Simpsons for some of us. Somebody said all families are dysfunctional. It's just that some are more dysfunctional than others. That's a little bit on the negative side, but I suppose there may be a little bit of truth in that if you look at it very closely. Our purpose here tonight, though, is not to throw rocks at all of the folks who aren't perfect, because none of us are perfect, and we'd all be throwing rocks at each other if that were the case. We're here, rather, this evening to acknowledge the fact that none of us is perfect, and that there is no such thing as a perfect family insofar as our experience goes. We are presently most concerned with the fact that practically all of our families have members who are not Christians. And all of us have friends, acquaintances, even close associates who are in that category as well. How do we reach them? Before we go any further, let's acknowledge the fact that there is no such thing as a faithful Christian who does not have influence. It's very similar to the point that I made this morning on the matter of validating our Christianity or authentic Christian living. There's no such thing as an authentic Christian without influence. All of us have influence. If we're living the Christian life, then we've got influence. We are influential upon those around us to some degree, and in some cases more greater degrees than in other cases, but we all are influential. By the same token, those who claim to be Christians but are not faithful Christians also have a negative influence. No matter who we are, no matter what our situation is, we are not without influence. Not everybody around us is as receptive to our influence as we'd like for them to be. But we all have influence. In fact, it seems sometimes that close family members may be among those who are particularly blind to our good influence. None of us lives in a make-believe fantasy world. And there are some people, and some of us have them very close in our lives, some people who just simply choose not to be receptive to the gospel of Jesus Christ. I hope and pray that that is not the situation that best describes you and a loved one or you and a close friend. But that is the reality in some cases. There are some people who absolutely have refused thus far to be receptive to the truth. Now, with that said, let's begin with looking at this from the negative side. There are some things that we cannot do in our efforts to reach anyone, but particularly family members and friends, with the gospel of Christ. Number one, you cannot undo the past. If perhaps you have missed opportunities for sharing the gospel in the past, it won't do any good now to brood over it. I'm not saying that missed opportunities are not regrettable, because they most certainly are. But stewing over what has happened in the past does not help the present or the future. Sometimes we may get so wrapped up in regretting the missed opportunities in the past that we don't even recognize the new opportunities when they come along. In the life of every single child of God, I don't care who it is, there always will be some of those, I call them if-onlys. Oh, if only I had so-and-so. Or if only I had not done so-and-so. If only I had been better at, if only I had tried hard. There, no matter who we are, every single one of us has if-onlys in our lives. And the cold hard fact is that some of those if-onlys are very expensive. Some of them represent some tragic things that have happened in our lives. If our regrets of past behavior involve unrepentant sin, then we need to repent of it and get that out of the way. But if we've done that, then as much as is possible, we need to move on. We need to concentrate on pressing forward, understanding that the regrettable things that have happened in the past cannot be revisited and, in most cases, cannot be revised. We need to concentrate on going forward. That's not to say that there's anything wrong with the fact that the past bothers us a little bit sometimes. The Apostle Paul, I believe, was one who fits into that very category. How many times do we find Paul in his writings mentioning the regret that he felt over his past life, the fact that he had persecuted the church, the fact that he had sinned against the Lord so grievously, and yet at the same time, he also expressed very clearly his thankfulness to the grace and the forgiveness and the mercy that he had been able to enjoy. We cannot allow our past failures to prevent us from pressing on toward the prize. Don't repeat the mistakes of the past, but don't let them freeze your potential for the future. You can't undo the past. Number two, you can't control the future. First of all, we have no idea what may happen in a person's life, a loved one, a spouse, a close friend, a family member. We have no idea what may come about in the events of the future that might cause him or her to stop and think and to suddenly realize how wrong they've been. And so what we need to remember in that situation is never give up. Never, ever give up. Make sure that you're there with a credible example and a valid word when perhaps that person comes to his or her senses and is ready to stop and think and listen. Make sure that you're there. Make sure that you're ready. Make sure that you're well prepared. You never know when something unforeseen may take that person out of their comfort zone and cause them to reevaluate their life in a way that they have never before done. You want to make sure that you're ready when that happens. Secondly, sometimes on this same point, we may make a grave mistake by assuming that a person is not going to be interested in what we have to say, and so we never go to the trouble of saying it. I've known of cases, more than one, where an individual would appear to have absolutely no interest in considering the truth and obeying the gospel or in making a change in their life until that person is confronted in a very bold and plain way. And I've known cases where the person said, well, you know, nobody ever asked me before. Don't assume that someone isn't going to be interested in hearing the truth. Don't ever plan to fail before you make an effort. How many times have we ever said, you know, I need to talk to so-and-so about the church, but I know he won't listen. And so we never get around to doing it. Actually, he may just be waiting for you to bring it up. Perhaps not, but perhaps so. The wise men said in Proverbs 25, verse 11, a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold on a silver tray. How many people have been lost simply because we didn't try, because we assumed that they wouldn't be interested? And then we never know when our efforts will combine with another element to bring about a good result on down the road somewhere. You know, sometimes it appears that maybe God uses two or three or a dozen people in little incremental ways to finally pull someone out of the situation that they're in. Paul said in 1 Corinthians 3, verse 6, I planted, Apollos watered, and God gave the increase. Looks like a joint effort there, doesn't it? Don't assume that it's all on you. There may be others involved that you don't even know about. Perhaps all we can do is move a person an inch closer to the Lord at any given time, but at least we've moved them that much closer so that perhaps someone else can take them even further. Number three, you can't make someone believe the truth. The sad reality is that some people are so stubborn, for whatever reason, that they may never accept and obey the truth. The good thing about that is you can never tell for sure. And so never stop trying. We must try and try and try. Now, along that line, there are some things that we can do in a positive sense. Those are things that we can't do in the efforts to bring someone to the Lord, but there are some things that we can do. Number one, I would suggest that you can preach and pray. Now, actually, I use the term preach there in the figurative sense because most people who are resistant to obedience will not put up with a whole lot of preaching outside the church building. You know, there are some other words we use for that process. Nagging, needling, hounding, harassing. There comes a point at which most of that doesn't do any good. Every situation stands or falls on its own merits, and we need to judge wisely how far we can go with our approach. But I do use that term, preach, to remind us that the truth must be plainly told. The truth has to be taught in order for the truth to be effective. Surely the very worst possible scenario that we could ever imagine is portrayed in that song that says, when in the better land before the bar we stand, how deeply grieved our souls will be if any lost one there should cry in deep despair, you never mentioned him to me. You never mentioned him to me. You helped me not the light to see. You met me day by day and knew I was astray, yet never mentioned him to me. Don't beat around the bush. Don't leave them wondering what's right or what's wrong or where you stand or where they stand. Don't be ugly. But don't be so diplomatic that you never get around to making the point. Preach and pray. Pray without ceasing, 1 Thessalonians 5:17. Sometimes it may even be effective to pray in their presence, provided, of course, that they're agreeable. At any rate, make sure they know that you believe in prayer. Make sure God knows that you believe in prayer. Pray for more opportunities. Pray for wisdom. Pray that perhaps God will in some way take them outside their comfort zone. And pray that you will be there when their heart softens. Preach and pray. 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 Number two, you can listen and love. Now, hopefully, we've all noticed already that loving and listening go together like peaches and cream. If you love someone, you'll listen to them. And usually, if they perceive that you care about them, they will seek you out when they feel that it's time to talk. Let's never be shy about expressing, either in words or with our actions, preferably both, that we care. If they get the impression that it doesn't matter to us, if they get the impression that we don't care, they won't either. Those who don't seem to care are seldom sought out in times of need. Number three, you can serve and share. Here's another pair that go together naturally, just kind of like maybe peanut butter and jelly. Serving and sharing. When we humbly and unselfishly perform small acts of kindness or huge acts of generosity, it usually makes people take a second look at us. The fact is, if we are truly Christians, we're not like the world. The true Christian is one who has given himself or herself to the commitment that's demanded in Romans 12, verse 2. Be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind. And the true Christian is not interested in looking like or acting like everybody else in the world. Make sure that you never pass up an opportunity to be of service, particularly to someone who needs a good demonstration of what Christianity is all about. It is such a pleasing sense of fulfillment that we get when we do something generous or even sacrificial for someone else, and it seems to take them totally by surprise to see that we really do care or that we're not selfish like everybody else is. We've all got friends. You have an advantage over me, for example, in that area. Not that I don't have friends, but most of my friends know that I'm a preacher. And people look at preachers differently. They just always, right or wrong, fair or not, they expect perfection out of preachers. But you know, out of most of the rest of us, it kind of takes them by surprise when we do the right thing, or when we show them some kind of service or some kindness or generosity. It goes a long way. Sometimes nothing works like serving and sharing to cause a person to slow down and take a second look at the gospel of Jesus Christ. There is one final thing that we can do. We can pray that God's will be done and make ourselves available in every conceivable way to be a tool used at His disposal in whatever way God sees best. There are two things that God seldom does. Everything all at once, or nothing at all. Very rarely does God do everything at once. Very rarely does He do nothing at all. Pray that God's will be done, and that we will have the peace of knowing that we can be part of it. Remember, next week, next Sunday, is Friends and Family Day. Be sure to send out those brochures. Invite everyone that you can, especially family members, friends, associates. Lord willing, next Sunday morning, we're going to be talking about building stronger relationships. And then in the afternoon service, we're going to be discussing ways that we can show our love for others. It can be a good day if we'll all be here and if we'll bring someone with us. If you're subject to our Lord's invitation, we invite you to respond as we stand together and sing.